From an open letter to Miley Cyrus to the French elections and more, we've got you covered right here on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, let me ask you an honest question. How much do you hear about the culture, about dealing with cultural issues, about getting a Kenyan perspective on political issues? How much do you hear from that on Christian radio in general, from pulpits in general, Christian literature in general? How much do you hear about these things? Probably not a tremendous amount because it's not the main focus of your pastor preaching on Sunday. It's not the main focus of the Christian teaching on your radio network or on your Christian TV network. So I would say, if I'm guessing the answer to the question, you have to say relatively little. Well, that's part of the reason that we are here. Welcome to the broadcast. This is Michael Brown. Delighted to be with you as always. Phone lines are open, 866-348-7884. We've got some special interviews coming your way today. A little bit later this hour, I'll be joined by my friend Larry Tomczak, who wants to give us five reasons why Christians should attend a gay pride parade. Yeah, reaching out with the gospel. In the second hour, I'll be speaking with Peter LaBarber about just a real horrific thing that's happened with a man who was put forward as Donald Trump's army secretary and is basically, through a liberal witch hunt, been forced out. We'll talk about that. The elections in France, an open letter I wrote to Miley Cyrus, some of the latest fake news. We'll cover it all right here, 866-348-7884, if you want to join in. I have a couple of programs on God TV. They've just started airing this year. If you have Direct TV, then you can watch them on channel 365. It is. Yeah, NRB TV, our show where we take our part of our Friday broadcast and put that on TV, make it special for TV with video enhancements and things like that. That's NRB TV, channel 378. But we've got two shows on God TV. One of them is called Ask Me Anything, where people write in their Bible questions, theology questions, personal spiritual questions, and we answer them 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week. And then a preaching show on Sunday where I really preach my heart out, 6:30 in the evening on Sunday on God TV, just preach my heart out about holiness and repentance and revival and things like that. So I'm involved in preaching the gospel day and night. I'm involved in seeking to equip, build people up, teaching in our ministry school every week, pouring into our students at Fire School of Ministry. I'm doing that all the time. And also feel burdened to address moral and cultural issues. You know how many churches have asked me to come and address issues having to do with how do we handle LGBT issues? And when questions come up right within our own church and families, how do we handle these things? Or boy, we're confused politically. Which way is the nation going? Do we get involved and vote or not? Trying to bring a king perspective. So friends, we are here to fill a void. We are here to address these issues, yes, out of a burden and calling from the Lord, but also because we know that most are not called to address them the way that we address them. I'm not saying that your average pastor is supposed to address some of the issues as much as I do. I'm saying because they are not, because your average Bible teacher is not a call to address these things. If you're listening on Christian radio, think of all the other programs that are on over the course of the day. Very few address these. It's not the fault of the others. Everyone's doing, I believe, what they feel God's calling them to do. But that means that there is a need. So instead of people saying, well, why do you have to address these? Well, somebody's got to, because we've got to be informed. We've got to be ready. We have to understand. We've got to be salt and light. We want to be like the sons of Issachar in 1 Chronicles 12:32, who understood the times and knew what Israel should do. That's why we're here. All right, we're going to France when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That is shouts of victory from Paris, France last night with the announcement of the wide victory of Emmanuel Macron, the new leader of France. There's a lot to look at here. There is a lot to look at and a lot of questions going forward. And by the way, although he won, what, about two-thirds of the vote, he won over 90% of the vote from Paris. Interesting. Very interesting. 866-34-TRUTH. You're listening to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown. My latest article, an open letter to Miley Cyrus. If you didn't read it yet, go to AskDrBrown.org. You'll see it right on the homepage. Also, check out our recent videos as well. Resources there for you. Oh, have you signed up for our email list? Do you get my weekly emails? If not, be sure to do it because I've got a free ebook I want to send you. When you sign up for our email list today, I've got a free ebook to send you. So go to AskDrBrown.org. Sign up. It'll just take you a few seconds. And the ebook is called 7 Secrets of the Real Messiah. Yeah, I think you'll find it really, really eye-opening. It was eye-opening for me to put together. I think it's going to be eye-opening for you to read. So sign up for our emails at AskDrBrown.org. And if you're on Facebook, connect with us on Facebook there, or if you're on Twitter, or if you subscribe to YouTube videos, you can do all of that right on our homepage. You'll see the icons for Facebook, for Twitter, and for YouTube as well. Okay, France. On the one hand, France has said that they do not want to go too far to the right, hence they did not vote for Marine Le Pen. On the flip side, this is far more support for her position and for a strong right-wing party than has ever happened in France in recent history. I believe the most her father ever got with his party was 18% of the vote. She got 34% of the vote. And others have said that if things do not change in a positive way in France, if Macron turns out to be a disappointment, and he is kind of an out-of-nowhere leader and a very young man, just 39 years old. Now, there are other leaders that are also young that have been good leaders. But if things don't go in a good direction, if you continue to have major issues with radical Islamic terrorism, if you continue to have issues where there's not economic reform, if other things go negatively, then others are saying, hey, it could be within a decade you see Marine Le Pen leading France. You see her elected or someone else from that party. Now, there's a question in terms of what Marine Le Pen's party really stood for. Her father, leading the National Front, was known as a Holocaust denier. There were extremes in his party's position that should be rejected and have been rejected. But then Marine Le Pen threw her father out of the party and other known anti-Semites out of the party. And although the party platform is that it would do away with same-sex, quote, marriage, she appointed two gay men to very prominent positions in her campaign, in her party. And there are many gays, actually, that support her, which is considered interesting because they're more concerned right now with radical Islam and with things like that and the growing pressures in the society because of that. And there, interestingly, it was, if I'm correct, a gay atheist comedian who was one of the leaders opposing same-sex, quote, marriage in France. And basically, men are men and women are women. And, you know, so that, again, France is different than America in that respect. But those in Marine Le Pen's party said that they were demonized, that even in the States, we hear of them as the extreme right. I might even refer to them like that in the past. And a colleague said, well, are they that extreme? Mike, were their positions really that extreme? Or is that just what you heard? Yeah, probably just what I heard without analyzing them. Now, yes, there were some problems for Jews under Le Pen because she said you cannot be a dual citizen of Israel and France. If you're a Jew living in France, you're going to have to be either a citizen of Israel and not a citizen of France, or you're going to have to be a citizen of France, not a citizen of Israel. That is a real negative. That was a negative. And they were concerned that with a new nationalism and populism, that Jews end up scapegoated. And when France has said blanket, okay, we don't want Islamic garb, so we're just going to say no religious garb, no religious garb. So then a Jew can't wear a yarmulke? I mean, those kinds of things are unnecessary, are negative, are of concern to Jewish people. On the flip side, a Macron presidency, what will that mean? What will that mean in terms of fighting against radical Islam? At least you knew Le Pen would do that. Is France going to be safer? Is France going to put up a wall against the Islamization of its country, especially by radical Muslims? Is France going to have more wisdom in its immigration policies and things like that? There are many other issues to address. And here's one big problem. France, since the French Revolution, even though it is ostensibly Catholic, the fact is it is very secular. It is driven by humanism. It is driven by humanism. And just as America has religious Christian roots, I don't mean we've been a perfect Christian nation at any time in our history, obviously not, very obviously not, but we do have strong biblically based Christian roots. And it's because of those roots that we've had the liberties that we have. You see, the radical left continues to fight against real liberties, liberties of communication, speech, and different freedoms. There's constant suppression of those things, constant suppression of dissent and difference from those on the left, especially the radical left. So America, despite how secular it is in many ways, America has leaned historically right of center. And France, because of its humanism, is going to tend to go left of center. And then those that would be conservative on the right, it's easy to demonize them. This is what one of the leaders, senior advisor to Marine Le Pen, had to say, speaking with BBC after the defeat, Jean Messier. Listen to what he has to say, clip number two.
We are not against minorities. We want to restore the French identity as a French sovereignty. France, when it was proud of its idea, never was against minorities. I am the one who are issued from a minority, and I am a close advisor to Marine Le Pen. What you say now epitomize all the propaganda that was made against us between the two rounds of the election. We have been criminalized because we have been treated of Nazi, we have been treated of extreme right. And of course, when you repeat this every day and night, you influence the ballot.
Yes, so his issue is there has been misreporting of who they are, misreporting of their position, misreporting of the direction, the goals that they have, demonizing of them. Now, others would say it's fair. That's a debate to be had. I believe on the one hand, their history opened them up to demonization. That's one. Even though they've sought to distance themselves from that history. That's number one. Number two, the strong positions of Marine Le Pen further reinforce the negative stereotypes, because some of the positions might have been extreme, but overall, her positions may have been in the best interest of France. Overall, she might not have been extreme right anyway. So it's going to be very interesting to watch how this plays out. The populist movement in France has gone so far. It's made a lot of progress, but it's got a ways to go. How much of it is healthy? How much of it is unhealthy? The populist movement in Holland under Geert Wilders, very much an independent voice without a party behind him. He's made a lot of progress. He remains very influential, even though things have gone so far and stopped there. So these are issues to watch. Populism in America is one factor, but only one, that helped elect Donald Trump. And look at it, the American parallel. A lot of Americans don't like the way the country's going, and they say, we feel like we're losing our country, and we want it back. And that's a major reason they voted for Donald Trump. On the flip side, among those who feel like that are white supremacists and racists and others. So it'd be the same in France, that there are many in France who just don't like the way their country's going. They feel they're losing it to outsiders and losing it to other cultures, and they don't like it. And then among them, you'll have the racists, and you'll have the Muslim haters and the anti-Semites and others like that, that same mixed bag. But where France goes in the next 5-10 years, I say right now, is absolutely wide open and remains very, very precarious. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, where do I want to go next? This is Michael Brown. Thank you for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Tell you what. I just want to give you something to help you realize how different perspectives can be, all right? Many years ago, I was on a subway in New York City. I had a long ride. It was just one of these stops that you went over water, so it was a longer distance between stops on this particular subway, going from what was Far Rockaway, the beginning of Queens, into Manhattan, ultimately. And I remember that there were these guys from a particular cult, the Al-Ansar Mosque. I don't know if they're still around, but they were a cult. They preached that white man was the manifestation of Satan and things like that. And they were there, and we were having a debate about lots of things, about the Bible, about the Hebrew language, about Arabic language, and things like that. And I'm on my way into my class in New York City, New York University, where I'm getting my PhD in Near Eastern Languages and Literatures. I have in my briefcase that I'm carrying, this is in the early 80s probably, late 70s, early 80s, I have in my briefcase that I'm carrying text in Arabic, text in Babylonian, things like that. It's my field, right? And I'm debating these guys, and they're coming up with the most bogus, crazy things. And there was a bunch of guys, dark-skinned guys, surrounding them, people of color, surrounding them. And as I was making my points, the guys were cheering. And I thought, even though this cult says that the white man is the manifestation of Satan, even though these guys are real racists, the kids, the young people that are standing around, these young men that are listening to the dialogue, even they can tell that I'm right because they're cheering for my points. Well, interestingly enough, when the cult guys got off the subway, the little crowd surrounding us clapped for them. Yeah, I was completely misunderstanding who they were cheering for. In other words, I knew I had the facts. I knew I had the right information. Yeah, but I was the enemy. I was the bad guy. I was the outsider. And hence, even though I was giving facts and truth, I was the one getting mocked and jeered because there's just a difference in perspective. And then I didn't recognize what was happening because of my different perspective as well. Clip number 9, all right? Clip number 9. If you think about who should get an award for best fight against the system, a political leader who should get an award for best fight against the system, think for a minute. Who might that be? I know who I'm thinking. Few different ones I'm thinking about. But listen to this MTV Movie and TV Award, this special award given to this political leader for best fight against the system.
I will take this moment to go off script and say, Congresswoman Maxine Waters, thank you. Thank you for your work. Thank you for your voice and how you use it. And thank you for being an extraordinary example for all of us, especially in these times.
Now, To me, she's part of the system. Congresswoman Maxine Waters is the system. And yet, from their perspective, she's fighting against the system. Now, I'll tell you why I'm talking to you about this. I want to go a little bit further. Ellen DeGeneres was on with Matt Lauer, and she's talking about coming out. In fact, clip number four, let's just play this. It's a short clip. She talked about the effect that this has had on her life. Clip number four.
So it taught me compassion. It taught me that I was strong enough to start all over again. And it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
All right. So now he asks her, Matt Lauer asks her, if she would have Donald Trump come on her show. Now, I'm playing this about Ellen, but I'm going to apply it to ourselves in a moment. All right. This answer is classic. I mean, you'll be shaking your head as you listen. Clip number five.
Would you like him to come on the show?
No.
Why not? Why wouldn't someone like you like to sit down opposite the President of the United States?
Because I'm not going to change his mind. He's against everything that I stand for. We need to look at someone else who looks different than us and believes in something that we don't believe in and still accept them and still let them have their rights.
Oh, hang on. Time out here. So she won't sit with him because she won't change his mind. And he opposes everything she stands for. That's her perception, right? And we have to learn how to sit with people we differ with. Do you see the slight contradiction there? I won't sit with him because I totally differ with him. And we have to learn to be able to sit with people we differ with. Yeah, you'd say glaring, double standard, glaring hypocrisy. Do we do the same thing? Do we do the same thing? Do we criticize others for doing what we do? Oh, it's different because we're white. Well, that's what she would say also. See, if I'm telling you that we need to be able to sit down and have dialogue with people we differ with, and we need to hear them out and then ask them to hear us out. Yeah, but that doesn't, I don't do that when the person's totally wrong. Well, then that's going to be their same position to you. Yeah, so we've got to do a better job of being consistent with our moral outrage. We've got to do a better job of being consistent with our standards of righteousness. We have to guard against hypocrisy like anyone else. Uh-huh. It's the truth. So, I mean, the clip is just, you got to be kidding me. Give me the right to be who I am, but I'm not going to give you the right to be who you are. I will not sit and talk with you because you're a bigot, but we need to learn to sit and talk with people that call us bigots. Oh, so it goes one way, but not the other. But friends, I bet many of us are just as guilty of that as Ellen DeGeneres. Personally, I believe that. You know, I used to enjoy, many years ago, every so often I would watch Hannity and Combs. I used to enjoy it because each one would present their position, said good point, and then the other one would proceed to rip it to shreds. And you say good point. And it would make you realize, okay, you may have a conviction one way or the other, but it doesn't mean that the other side is just blowing hot air. Find out what they believe. Find out why. Interact with it. And then if you differ with it, at least you'll do it with substance. Friends, we're here to equip you. We're here to help you. We're here to serve you. We're here to be your voice. And every time I get a letter, an email, social media post from one of you thanking me for being your voice, it gratifies me because we work hard by God's grace and we pray and we really seek to do things with excellence to be your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. If you're not connected with me, either Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, or above all, if you're not connected getting my weekly emails, go to my website as soon as you have a break. If you're driving in the car, wait till you have a break, even a traffic light break at the least. Wait till you have a break, then go to Ask Dr. Brown. If you can do it now, go there right now, askdrbrown.org, and connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and be sure to sign up for our emails. When you do, a reminder, I've got a great ebook, 7 Secrets of the Real Messiah, I'm going to send to you as my gift. We come back. Should Christians go to a gay pride parade?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on the line of fire. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. I want to speak now with my dear friend, Larry Tomczak. He recently wrote an article on five reasons why Christians should attend gay pride parades, obviously for the purpose of outreach. For those who are not familiar with Larry's ministry, he's been on the front lines of lifestyle evangelism, church planting, and being a cultural commentator for many, many years. There are churches he's helped plant around America today that are thriving, healthy churches. And in recent years, he's been a burden even more and more to address what's happening in the culture. If you haven't taken his bullseye challenge yet, we will let you know how to do that in a moment. Hey, Larry, welcome back to the Line of Fire.
Well, Mike, it's an honor and a joy. I love you so much, and I trust today we'll have a very fruitful time together on this topic.
Yeah, absolutely we will. Larry, before we get into the specific subject of attending a gay pride parade, as much as anyone I know, you have practiced lifestyle evangelism for decades. What does that mean? What does lifestyle evangelism mean for you?
Well, I believe if we follow the method of the master, we see that evangelism was natural, it was relational, and I think it was enjoyable. And if we look at Jesus, it wasn't forced. It was a beautiful gesture to convey the love of God and help people get right with God. And so I encourage people to pray for divine appointments. You know, I did a book on that once, and believe that your steps are ordered by the Lord. And then look for ways to love people, serve people, build, you know, relationships, build a bridge, converse with people. And then out of that, if the Lord is leading you properly on the right path, share something, how Jesus transformed your life. And I've encouraged people, and you're going to like this, to do a personal testimony track. I know you have one, Mike. I do. And get this. This is so fresh out of the oven. On Saturday, an attorney from D.C. called me, Chip Grange, and he said, Larry, you're going to love this. In the church you planted here 40 years ago, we're having a conference on evangelism. And he said, on the screen, the guy that was coming in from South Africa, I guess there was some mix-up or something, and they had him on video doing the conference. And Chip said, Larry, you'll love this. This guy, Lex something, said, I want to give just a report that 30-some years ago, there was a guy that came to England, and his name's Larry Tomczak. And he influenced me in lifestyle evangelism. And as a result of that, I put together a testimony track that I've used, and I want to help you today in this conference. My life was changed. So that just was Saturday. And, Mike, I love it. If you saw me right now and reached in my back pocket, you wouldn't find a wallet, you'd find I carry these tracks. And I just find it's fun. You know, you plant a seed. So that's, I hope, an answer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And obviously it's because you love other people and you care about them. That's the thing that comes loudest and clearest. But, you know, these days, Larry, because everybody posts their stories on social media, everybody has a story to tell, it's even more appropriate to say, hey, here's my story, and I'd love to share it with you. And people are much more inclined to receive that than just a religious tract. In fact, I remember the first time that I spoke at your church when you were in Atlanta. I remember that you introduced to the congregation your next-door neighbors, the whole family. They had just moved in like a week ago, but you had already befriended them, and they were now visiting the church that first Sunday. So the question is, how do we get from there to a gay pride event? How is it that my friend Larry, who's been a church planter and a real lover of people and an evangelist, how does he get involved addressing issues having to do with gay activism and then has a heart for gay outreach? So we're going to come back. I want to find out from Larry how God laid on his heart to get involved with these things. And then we'll go through five reasons why Christians should attend gay pride events. We'll be right back.
The line.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, as a radio host, there are areas that I've focused on for many years that I have some expertise in. You could wake me up in the middle of the night in sound sleep and say, hey, get on the radio now and talk about this subject for an hour, and I do it without a problem. There are other things where I really need to read, research, understand, bring on special guests because they're not areas of specialization for me, and I need extra time to prepare. And a lot of the cultural issues, I'm strong in certain areas, not as strong in other areas, and that's certainly got to be the case with all of us. So my friend Larry Tomczak has put together something called the Bullseye Challenge, where every day for 30 days you can watch a video, short video, just a few minutes, with clear biblical foundations, clear reasoning in terms of how we approach the different critical moral cultural issues of the day, a different one each day. And then there's a book you buy to go with it. So between reading, watching the video, and praying like a half hour a day, you can really become equipped to address the key issues that we all face. Larry, this is the Bullseye Challenge. If someone want to get involved, they want to get equipped and take the Bullseye Challenge, what's the best way to do it?
Well, Mike, thank you. And it's a resource and a tool, and I really appreciate your commendation as well as senior leaders all over America. It's the challenge, as you said, take 15 minutes for 30 days. That's it. Watch a video, 3 minutes, read the little chapter in the book. You get it at the site, bullseyechallenge.com. Bullseyechallenge.com. No space, anything. There's a video that you could watch it immediately today, and then you get the book. And there's churches, there's ministries. Our church went through it collectively as a church, and it's helping people. And even on our topic today, Mike, a lot of people can be hesitant. They lack boldness. They get tongue-tied. And you and I both, we really want to help people become informed influencers. So we're salt, we're light, we're always prepared. Colossians says that, you know, use wisdom relating to outsiders, but it says so you know how to answer everyone. And so whether it's Islam or abortion, homosexuality, same-sex marriage, down the line, transgenderism, we're helping people through this. So thank you. Please, listeners, go to that, bullseyechallenge.com. I think you'll find it as a real blessing and tool to help you.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much, Larry, for putting the material together, for taking the time to do it. How did you get burdened to start dealing with gay and lesbian issues? It sounds like you had a major outreach in this area in years past. You and I don't come out of homosexual backgrounds, so it's not been a particular burden we carried. I know how God began to call me to address the issues and reach out to the people starting in 2004. Was it just that this is kind of unavoidable in culture and you felt you had to address things?
Well, you know, Mike, you and I both lived in the D.C. area for quite a while. I was there 24 years, and when we started with a handful of people in a home, it grew in about 3 to 4 years to over 2,000, primarily young people. And there was an anchor verse that was very real to us, and it spills right over into what we're talking on here. And it's from Matthew 9, 36 to 38. We lived with this verse. It says, when Jesus saw the crowds, he was moved with compassion for them because they fainted. They were scattered like sheep without a shepherd. And then he said to his followers, his disciples, he said, look, the harvest is plentiful, but laborers are few. Therefore, pray to the Lord of the harvest to send out the laborers into his harvest. And so that harvest, I believe, is around us today. We can look at crowds. We can look at academia, the universe, and we can say, oh, my, look what's happening. Or we can pray for laborers to go into those fields as salt and light, but they have to be prepared. So I believe it's critical because in 2009, I think you're very aware, former President Barack Obama, who was a strong advocate for so many of the LGBTQ agenda items, he declared, he's the first president to ever declare June, this is a few weeks, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender Pride Month. In other words, let's celebrate this lifestyle. Well, we know this is a lifestyle that was identified with sin and shame and social stigma. But when we see and hear they're coming in our area, I can tell you, I'm in the Nashville area. It's big. It's coming up. It's going to be 3 days. It'll be a month in schools. And I think most people listening today say, yeah, I've seen something, or yeah, every year it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. So what do we do? And Mike, I honestly, as you know, I think there's three options. Isaiah 3:9 is one. It says people declare their sin is Sodom. They don't hide it. And many say this is the brazenness, the debauchery today. So steer clear of this nonsense and this filth. That's how they'd say it. Others would say, wait. Jesus said those who are well, they don't need a physician, but those that are sick, I desire mercy, not sacrifice. I've come to call the not call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. So that's a motivational verse. And then I've heard others say, look, I had enough of this. I don't want to bother with it. I could care less. So, Mike, I've gone to 15 gay pride events, and I go prayed up. I want to put some, if I can say this right up front, this is very important, because you may be a parent or a pastor or a young believer and say, yeah, I'm going to go. I don't believe Jesus sent them out individually, but in pairs. I think you need to make sure there's a maturity level, that there's pastoral, covering, so to speak, that you go in groups. You know, it's not something you do foolishly. And be aware, as you know, Mike, at these events, there can be some people that are not clothed in modesty. There can be T-shirts with slogans and profanity and things like that, and people drinking, and it's a trip. So not everybody should go. I put that caveat. But I go for five reasons, and I believe that these are legitimate biblical reasons. So some today listening are going to be prompted to respond and engage. Others, you're going to just stand back in a good way and pray. But come on, parents, pastors, we can't just write people off and say, who cares about these people? God loves them. He sent his son to die for each one of them, and they need to hear the gospel.
So rather than look at it only in the negative, like what are they marching for, or why is this in the streets of our community? In some cities, gay pride events can still be pretty vulgar. In other cities, they become much more tame. In their origins, they're often extremely vulgar. And of course, June is the month celebrating the Stonewall riots in New York City, which President Obama in his second inaugural speech tied in with women's rights going back to Seneca and civil rights going back to Selma, and now gay rights going back to Stonewall, which was really a riot, an uprising against police there, but now something to be celebrated. So that happened in June, hence June being the big gay pride month. So the real issue is, yeah, there's a lot going on in these marches that we don't approve of, or a message we don't approve of. But you could look at it the other way and saying these are a lot of people now all together in one place. And certainly there are people hurting, people under conviction of sin, people maybe from godly backgrounds. So a great opportunity to reach out. So let's start. We can keep going in the next segment if we need to. But give me your first reason why Christians should attend a gay pride event.
Well, the first one is that we can be there praying for the participants, praying. The glitter, the costumes, the slogans, the alcohol, things like that there. These are broken people whom God loves, and he longs to redeem them. And we got to see beneath the what I would say are just forlorn faces and empty eyes, and people projecting an image that they're really, hey, having a blast. And some are. They're kind of escaping. But I think we can go. And just like Jesus, he prayed. And he said, pray the Lord of the harvest. So that's the first thing. And, Mike, the first one I attended in the Nashville area, 10 years ago, we came to this area from Atlanta, actually 10 years ago on Father's Day. And I remember the first guy I talked to, he was a young guy. He had just graduated from high school. And I just struck up a conversation, friendly, you know, just build a bridge. Hey, how's it going? Where are you from? And then the beautiful thing was this. I said, hey, now, you come to these? And he said, no, this is my first one. And this guy was maybe 17. And here's what he said. I said, oh, okay. I said, I just moved here from Atlanta. I said, now, you're motivated. What leads you to come this year? And he said, well, I'm looking for a place to fit in. That's what he said to me. I'm looking for a place to fit in. Now, I thought, well, this guy's struggling with same-sex attraction, how deep, the devil at work to deceive. And so these individuals, when we go to an event like this, I think we pray, because I believe as I spoke with him and I did give him my little testimonial track, he was receptive to it. And I don't want to fool anybody listening that everybody's receptive, but there's an art, a skill to how we engage people, love them as we're talking here today. But number one, Mike, I believe we pray for the participants. That's the first reason I go.
And you feel, we just got 30 seconds, that being there helps you to pray more effectively when you're close to people?
Oh, Mike, when you look into the eyes of people and the faces, any self-righteousness, I think, just melts. And you begin to say, my God, you love these folks. And I'm not talking pity. I'm just saying, think where we were at. Think where you – I was in a band called The Lost Souls. I was as lost as anybody.
And someone came and reached out. All right, we'll come back. We'll finish up Larry Tomczak's five reasons for Christians to attend Gay Pride event. Again, you have to be sure this is the right place for you to be and that you're in a good place to do it and reach out with love. You don't want to get there and get into a screaming match with someone. So got to be the right person to go, but some good reasons to go. We got four more when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire to take Larry Tomczak's Bullseye Challenge to get equipped to know how to address the key issues we're facing in our society. Go to bullseyechallenge.com. All right, we've got a few minutes left. Larry, let's go through reason number two, why Christians should attend a gay pride event.
Well, secondly, is to relate to those that are rejected. If I'm not mistaken, the movie that was the Academy Award winner was about an African-American guy that went through a journey of rejection. And that was the best movie of the year. And there's a series on HBO now, 13 Reasons, and it's rejection and then leads to teen suicide. I know the story of Ellen DeGeneres. Rejection, betrayal. So people are milling around, and they can try to project an image, but the blank stares, the plastic smiles, it can't mask the emptiness. So I believe we're called like Jesus. The woman at the well, hey, look at her life. He took an interest in her, and I think that's a second reason. A third reason, Mike?
Yeah, hang on. Yeah. You mentioned Ellen DeGeneres and rejection. Most would think of her just as one of the most popular, loved women in the world today. Why do you speak of rejection?
Well, Mike, she shared in an interview a while back what her story was. And I don't have it in front of me, and I like to be accurate like you, but, you know, with a particular relative, reportedly, she said she fled the home. She ended up, staying in, was it a hospital room or something, just trying to avoid somebody because of what she was going through. So when people experience abuse, whatever level it is, they can then feel rejected by a parent or a loved one. And there's so much rejection in this culture today. And I just think when you're at an event like this, it's obvious. And so I believe don't relate to people in some mechanical way. When I was at the last one, this is the absolute truth. As I was leaving, there was a guy with a bullhorn. He was standing on a stool and he was screaming. I am not kidding. Through the bullhorn, "You're going to hell. You're going to burn." He was screaming and yelling. And you know what the crowd was doing? Mocking. They were telling him, "Get the blank out of here." And I thought, this would be better to turn that thing off. And I tried to relate to the guy and make it kind of, but he was just determined, this is the way you do it. I don't think you relate to rejected people by doing it that way. So, which brings us to our third point, Mike, demonstrating God's love. You know, Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Whom you would change, you must first love." And so to go to an event like this, buy somebody, you know, strike a conversation, buy them a burger, you want a little drink, talk. We actually put together dream interpretation booths. They were great. People come by, they say, "What's this?" We say, "Well, do you ever have dreams?" "Yeah." "Would you like to have some interpretation?" "Yeah." And it's a great way to move in spiritual gifts of a word of knowledge or prophetic giftings, and then to share with people in a non-threatening, winsome way in love. And honestly, to me, that's one of the most effective ways at a gay pride event is have a dream interpretation booth, love people, have some free water, you know, there for them. And then if they say they're interested, love them by blessing them with some dream interpretation.
And
you want the last two?
Yeah, hang on. Dream interpretation. So how How do you go about doing that? Do you just guess? Do you ask the Holy Spirit to give you insight? Do you draw things based on biblical principles?
Well, the Bible says, you know, obviously we earnestly covet spiritual gifts, and there are gifts of a word of wisdom, a word of knowledge, gift of prophecy, and you step out in these situations. You smile, you greet people, and people would, they'll just come up. They just come up to me, and they'll just say, "What is this?" Because you put above dream interpretation. They'll say, "What is this?" And I just say, "Well, do you ever have dreams?" And I say, "We believe that these dreams come from somewhere, some transcendent entity, and we believe God gives them. It's in the Bible, whether you believe it or not. And have you ever had a dream? Oh, yeah. You ever have a reoccurring dream?" And then, you know what? You step out and give expression to your impression. So you might say to somebody says, "Well, I've had a dream repeatedly about this accident, and, you know, I went over a cliff, and it was scary, and I wish I didn't have it." And say, "Boy, man, I empathize with you. I've had some bad ones like that, too." But you ever think about eternity, Jim? Have you ever thought, like, if that really ever did happen, what you do? And I'm not saying you put fear in people, but you can capitalize on that. And there's amazing words of knowledge, wisdom, encouragement that can come to get people thinking and moving them closer, I believe, towards a relationship with Jesus Christ.
Right. The fact is there is future judgment. It is real. The question is, how is it shared and in what context, and how do we warn? How do we give people hope? All right, we got 2 minutes. Give us the rest real quick.
Yeah, the last two is just, I believe, because I'm investing in eternity. And, you know, we were part of the Brownsville Revival, and Steve Hill would say, you know, he would challenge us about living for eternity. And so if we take time to invest in people, and it says in Daniel, those who are wise will shine as the brightness of the expanse of heaven, and those who turn the many to righteousness as stars forever and ever. So we can help people in terms of their eternal destiny. And then lastly is evangelizing. Bottom line, Jesus came to seek and save the lost. And I see people that are militant. They'll be very combative at something like this. You got to maybe back off there. You see moderate people. They're looking for acceptance, like that young guy I told you. They're experimenting. But then there's others moving on, and they're empty, and they want to abandon what they're doing, but they're seeking purpose and hope, identity, and life. So I believe that we have a privilege to seek God when these gay pride events come up, and do it as groups. As a pastor, you could have a youth group. We would pray before we went. And honestly, I'll be going this year. And if you're in Nashville, you'd see me walking the grounds, talking to people. And I just see it as a tremendous opportunity to love people and move them one step closer to God, and also away from a lifestyle that we know brings destruction physically, spiritually, and is an empty, dead-end street.
All right, loud and clear, Larry, thanks for your love, and may the Lord use you on the front lines in the days ahead. And by the way, we fully understand that there's a whole heterosexual world lost in pain, rejected, hellbound, in need of a Savior. So we do not discriminate in our outreach. We reach out to everyone, and you've set a great example doing that for many years. Again, friends, visit bullseyechallenge.com. Get involved. Get equipped. Larry, great talking to you today.
Love you. Thank you. I hope people are inspired today.
Amen. God bless you. All right, friends, we come back for everyone that will be with us in the next hour. I'm going to have another fascinating interview about something very disturbing that has just happened in the last few days here in America. Got some really interesting sound bites my producer Matt found from Donald Trump, an interview on CNN, 1990. Yeah, 1990. Interesting. We're going to talk about that as well. And, yeah, I'm going to share some fake news from Israel, being exposed by Israel, I should say. And, I think I'm going to weigh in a little bit on Obamacare, Trump care. Have a discussion about that. More to come. Stay right here. From an open letter to Miley Cyrus to the French elections and more, we've got you covered right here on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, there are times when we must raise our voices and speak out. There are times when to be silent is to sin. There are times when there is great injustice, and we have to speak out as God's people. Otherwise, we dishonor that sacred name by which we are called. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to the Line of Fire broadcast. Number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. Just saw a really, really sweet and gracious note sent to me by someone who read my open letter to Miley Cyrus. I was flying back from a conference in Phoenix yesterday, Sunday, and just felt led to write this on the slight chance that she would read it, but knowing that many others would read it who would begin to pray for her, and perhaps some of her followers would read it. I'll share a bit more of that with you in a moment. And want to talk about a number of things happening in the news today, from Israel to France to America. But first, I want to speak to a dear friend and colleague, Peter LaBarbera. Peter has been on the front lines of cultural issues for years now. It's been very costly for him on a personal level. He and his family have had to sacrifice because of it. And when I asked him some years back on the phone in terms of why he has spent so much time dealing with gay and lesbian activism and things like that, he said, "I'll stop when they stop." In other words, things are knocking at our door. They call for a response. He writes regularly now for LifeSite News, a great pro-life website, LifeSiteNews.com. Peter, great to have you on the air again today. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me, and kudos to all your great work.
Well, thanks, sir. Before we get into the specific situation with Mark Green that we're going to address today, Peter, where do you see things going in America? Have you, in years past, warned that if we didn't wake up, this is the direction we'd be heading?
Absolutely, Mike. It's just it seems to be steamrolling, whether you know we have a Republican president or not. And I think this case of Mark Green is very instructive. The left does not possess the reluctance that so many Christians seemingly have about speaking their version of the truth. Yet so many of us are reluctant to defend it. They're promoting a lot of lies, but they are very zealous in doing so. And in that, in so doing, they're taking good people like Dr. Mark Green down.
Yeah. So you're talking about that there can be an all-out assault from the left, especially the radical left, demonizing someone. And often believers don't speak up, or even just conservative political leaders don't speak up. And so the American public pretty much gets one narrative of things. And Peter, are you finding that Christians are waking up now because things have gone so far, or do you still find most slumbering when it comes to the cultural issues?
I think some people are waking up, and I think the whole conservative movement has woken up to a degree that they understand that there's a very sophisticated assault by the left. But I am troubled that there are still a lot of Christians, Mike, as you know, who are sort of burying their head in the sand, or they're talking that, you know, they're saying that the world's going to end soon, or you know, Jesus is going to come. We don't know when Christ is going to come. And so we shouldn't be saying he's going to come next week. And we can't be defeatist and use such arguments to be defeatist, because if we don't defend the truth, the other side will prevail. In a free society, that's what happens. And what we saw with Dr. Mark Green here, you know, up for Army Secretary, was a very sophisticated assault coming from the LGBT movement, coupled with leftist news organizations like Huffington Post, all focused on one thing, taking this guy down. And I wonder, you know, where were the Christians in defending him? Obviously, we didn't do it effectively enough.
Yep, absolutely. We'll be right back, and we're going to tell you exactly what happened. Stay tuned.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, Mark Green, Dr. Mark Green, Tennessee State Senator, was President Trump's choice to be the next Army Secretary. And last week he stepped down and withdrew from the process of being put forward. And there is a quote of his that's been widely circulated. Huffington Post publicized this. Others joined against attacking him. And because of that, he had to withdraw from the position of Army Secretary, being nominated as Donald Trump's choice to be the next Army Secretary. Let's listen to what he had to say, then we'll get some commentary and background from Peter LaBarber. Go ahead, Johnny.
The government exists to honor those people who live honorably, who do good things, to reward people who behave well, and to crush evil. So that means as a state senator, my responsibility, very clearly in Romans 13, is to create an environment where people who do right are rewarded and people who do wrong are crushed. Evil is crushed. And so I'm going to protect women in their bathrooms, and I'm going to protect our state against potential infiltration of Syrian ISIS people through a refugee program. And whoever wants to stand up and take me on that, I'm ready to fight.
All right. So that was Senator Mark Green speaking, and that quote has gone viral. We are told that he's comparing transgenders to ISIS and that he's saying that transgenders are evil. He's also said that gender identity confusion is a mental disease. So, Pete, what happened to Senator Green after making those comments and then Huffington Post going after him?
Okay, what happened was basically the words taken out of context, Mike. Huffington Post went with the headline about crushing evil in transgenders, and then it went further, and I think it ultimately ended up with GLAAD saying he wanted to crush evil and basically saying transgenders were the evil. In other words, he wanted to crush transgenders. You would think that Mark Green wanted to take LGBT people and burn them at the stake. That's how ridiculous it got. Obviously, he's talking about good versus evil. And I believe it is evil to allow men into women's restrooms with little girls who could be there. And I believe ISIS is evil, but they conflated it all. And again, the objective was to make Mark Green appear hateful. They did the same thing on transgenders, Mike. He said that professional psychiatrists, I believe, say that transgender is evil. Well, that is what you take renowned psychiatrists like Dr. Paul McHugh. He believes transgenderism, believing you actually are the opposite sex, is a mental disorder. But the average person doesn't look at the details. They just see these screaming headlines, and it scares good people away.
All right, so basically these are Christian beliefs he has, also beliefs he has as an elected officer. And why couldn't he just withstand the storm? Why couldn't he just say, explain further, and then Trump stand with him and so on? Why couldn't he withstand the storm? How bad did it get?
It got really bad, and John McCain didn't help. The senator from Arizona, the moderate senator, Republican, said he was worried about the comments. And I think, we could say that Mark Green might have just gotten sick of the whole deal. I wish he would have prevailed, because I think we need to stay in these fights, because every Mark Green that gets taken down by the radical left makes it much harder for a principled man like yourself, Michael, to get involved in government service later on. So each one of these defeats emboldens the left and leads to more defeats.
All right. And just think, it wasn't that long ago that gay activists hesitated by adding the T word, that the Human Rights Campaign within the last decade, when they were pushing for ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and pushing federally for sexual orientation to be included along with ethnicity and race and things like that, that were immutable, that they left out the T word, transgender, at one point, and then after protests said, no, we're all followers. So this was something very controversial. What Dr. Green's saying just a few years ago would not have raised that many eyebrows, and now it is. So you wonder how far the things go. I've said for many years, though,
Michael, I'll do you one better. Remember, his predecessor was an openly homosexual man named Eric Fanning, who headed the Army, the Army Secretary. So are we now in America where you can be a homosexual activist who actually promoted transgenderism in the military, used his power. That was Eric Fanning under Obama. That's okay, not controversial, but yet a Christian family man who actually served three terms in the he had three services abroad. He's too controversial to be our Army Secretary.
Yeah, quite extraordinary when you think of the process. So it's equal rights for some, it's equal consideration for some, which is why I've said for years that those who came out of the closet want to put us in the closet. It's not a matter of side by side and just, you know, live and let live. It's absolutely not that at all. What about the question of gender identity confusion, gender identity disorder, which is now called gender dysphoria? Is there a scientific debate about this? Do all psychologists, psychiatrists, scientists agree that this is fine and normal? Are there some that still say it's a disorder? Where does it stand?
Oh, well, of course there's some. It's a huge debate, and it actually the majority opinion, I believe, would be on our side on this, Mike. You know, what the left is trying to do is always push the envelope. And their ultimate goal is to get us to pay for these awful body disfiguring transsexual sex change so-called operations. And of course there's a huge debate. There is no scientific consensus, although we have to understand that the left is trying to change science, use politics, just like they did with homosexuality in 1973, to remove that from the list of mental disorders. They're now trying to do the same thing to transgenderism, transsexuals, guys who want a man who says, well, you know, I really am a woman. They're using their political power to pressure science.
Yeah, and of course, that's what happened with DSM-5, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for the American Psychiatric Association, that transgender activists and others successfully got this removed as a disorder and now reclassified as gender dysphoria. So the disorder is not that a biological male thinks he's a female. The disorder is if he is uncomfortable with feeling that way, which is quite extraordinary. It's not to minimize struggles people go through. It's not to minimize difficulties and hardships, but you don't turn the world upside down based on the struggles of the tiniest percent of the people. And isn't Senator Green also talking about the fact that when you just say, decree, okay, any man that identifies as a woman can use the woman's restroom, that you're going to have plenty of heterosexual perverts and predators that are going to want to use that for their voyeurism or worse, and they're going to use a transgender law to open the door to their perversion. I'm talking about heterosexuals. Isn't that part of what he's concerned about?
Absolutely. And in fact, Mike, people who identify as transgender, even male-to-female transsexuals, for example, transgenders, sometimes still are attracted to they say they're still attracted to women. So you could have a guy in a dress. I believe this happened at the Target in Idaho. Correct me if I'm wrong, but a voyeur, sort of a pervert, was taking video at a Target changing room where women were getting dressed, was videoing that. He was transgender, but he was still, you know, using that for heterosexual pornography. And so just because you put on a dress doesn't mean you're not still attracted to women. So we're opening up the door to all sorts of perversions and potential for crimes and abuse of women.
Right, exactly. So a transgender, a biological male who identifies as female in many cases says, no, I'm not gay. I still have normal sexual attraction. So he would still be attracted to women. So what's he doing in a ladies' locker room at the YMCA as ladies are getting undressed? And even if he's 100% harmless, is this, you know, you get your daughter coming out of the shower stall after swimming at the YMCA, and there's a biological male there. Is that what you want? So the fact that he calls that evil, we understand what he's saying in it. And then he mentions other things that he considers evil, like ISIS. Is he saying that a man who struggles with his gender identity is the equivalent of an ISIS terrorist? Of course not. But that's the way it's going to be portrayed. The person's going to be demonized. And it is a wake-up call, because it's basically saying there's now a religious test. If you hold right to biblical morality, that you may not be able to serve in certain places. Hey, look, the SPLC put Ben Carson on its hate list a couple of years ago until Bill O'Reilly exposed it. I mean, that's how, if these folks had their way, the radical left, I wouldn't be on radio doing what I'm doing, and you wouldn't be able to write what you're writing.
Right. And Mike, let's remember their main tactic is to personalize everything. So let's say Dr. Michael Brown says that homosexual marriage is an abomination. Here's the translation that would end up on the gay websites. Dr. Brown said gays are an abomination. That's how they do it. And to the average Joe, somebody says, well, wait a minute, that doesn't seem quite right. What's off? What's he saying? That's how they do it. They don't put things in context. And then one site leads to an even worse version, and that's what we saw with Mark Green. The HuffPo version was in advance of what he said, made it a little worse. And then the gay website, I think GLAAD was the worst, and that's GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, which you called the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Disagreement. And I got another one for you, Mike. How about the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Advancing Disinformation?
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Exactly right. Pete, keep up what you're doing on the front lines. Truth will ultimately triumph. We will fight disinformation with truth. God bless you, man.
Thank you, Mike. Bye-bye.
All right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Listen, friends, I understand that when someone says, this is who I am, and then you say, what you do is wrong, what you do is sinful, what you do is ugly in God's sight, they hear, no, this is who I am. So, for example, I can't tell you how many people I've heard it from, gay men, when you say, well, I believe what the Bible says, Leviticus 18:22, if they're asking you that it's detestable in God's sight, it's an abomination for man to lie with a man, they hear you saying you are an abomination. You are detestable, because their mentality is, this is not what I do, this is who I am. Their mentality is, this is my identity, right? Just be like if you said to me, okay, you're married to Nancy for 41 years, you're heterosexual, that's what you do, it's not who you are. No, it's who I am in that respect. I'm heterosexual. However, I do not define myself primarily as being heterosexual. I define myself primarily as being a child of God. And everything flows out of that. And if I was a single heterosexual, that does not allow me to be sexually active or promiscuous or to give myself to pornography or other unclean things like that, I'm still required to live a holy life. And as a married man, I'm required to live a holy life. But I do understand that when we raise concerns about a law and the impact the law could have, that people are going to take that personally. Here, I, out of conscience before God and out of a refusal to capitulate to the society, I still put marriage in scare quotes when talking about same-sex marriage, in other words, same-sex, quote, marriage. Now, in some circumstances, I can't do that. An editor of a particular website might have a policy where they remove scare quotes. If I have it throughout a book, you know, someone suggested, if I've focused on it in one book, don't have it throughout the whole book. Once you say it once, that's fine. Okay, and I accept what the editors are saying. They understand the point that I'm making. And in some settings, it's just not appropriate to use the scare quotes. But as much as it's up to me, I'm going to use the scare quotes because I do not accept two men or two women coming together as marriage. Now, I fully understand that a gay couple listening to me right now says, why do you hate me? Why do you hate me? Why do you say that my marriage is not as valid as your marriage? Why are you judging me that we don't love each other the way you love your wife? I'm not making that statement, but I understand why you feel that way. I understand why you feel that way. It's not what I believe, because I don't hate you. I care about you. And God knows the pain that I've carried wrestling through these issues. Here, look, I'll give you an example. Here's the way I think, all right? I'm being as straight, honest, clear with you as I can be. And if you want to weigh in, 866-348-7884. The other day, I was leaving to speak, going to be flying out of state, and just talked to Nancy briefly before going. She wasn't feeling that well, and just told her how much I loved her and stuff, and left. And I began to think later in that day about a gay couple. About a gay couple that had been together. I'd read a quote about gay couples, and someone knew a couple together so many years, and they were so faithful, and their heterosexual friends had gotten divorced. And I began to think about a gay couple, maybe raising a kid, or a gay couple that had been together many years, and how they'd be expressing tenderness towards each other and love towards each other. In other words, I'm not demonizing people. It's just my own thoughts, my own private thoughts. I'm not thinking demonized thoughts about others. Or, well, yeah, they're probably slept with like 80 people since they've been married, or they're terrible parents and trying to get their kids to be gay. No, I'm not thinking those thoughts. Honestly, I'm not thinking those thoughts. Yeah, many gay men advocate open marriage and say that, you know, as long as there's honesty, that you bring in other partners and they should be monogamish rather than monogamous for some gay men, especially some gay women too, especially gay men define monogamy as being primarily committed to one person, but not only. I understand that. I understand you're going to still have differences when it's two men or two women than a man and a woman. I understand that. But I understand there are plenty of gay couples that they fall in love and they're so excited that the other one loves them and they can't wait now to, quote, get married. And commit the rest of their lives together. And some of them say, hey, we believe the Bible. We pray. We go to church together. We go to this great gay church. And we believe the same Bible you do. You're just misinterpreting a few passages. And you know, they've adopted some kids. And they love their kids. I believe that. I believe I'm not demonizing anyone. I'm simply saying it's not marriage. Just like 2 plus 2 equals 4 is not spelling. And cat, C-A-T, is not math. All right? That's my point. It's not marriage. The way God established marriage and the way it's been through history is the union of a man and a woman. Even when you have polygamy and other things like that, it always says a man and woman. The same way, I'm not demonizing a transgender individual who struggles. Why would I demonize someone who's struggling? Why would I demonize someone that's in pain? Why would I demonize someone who's kept this secret for years and felt they couldn't tell anyone? Here's a married man who secretly feels like he's a woman. Why would I demonize a man in the midst of his suffering? Why would I demonize a four-year-old child, a four-year-old girl that says, Mommy, I'm a boy. I'm a boy. Why would I demonize that kid? No. The reason we address the issues and stand against the agenda is because the agenda is destructive, because the agenda is hurtful and harmful. Because transgender activists have declared war on gender distinctions. They have. They have literally declared war on gender. Gender is the enemy in so many ways. And gay activism continues to be the principal threat to freedom of religion, speech, and conscience in America. That's why we address things the way we do. And there are heterosexual predators who will abuse laws to protect or give rights to transgenders. They will abuse them, and it is unwise to make these changes. And as I'll say once again, you don't turn the world upside down to accommodate less than 1% of the population. And don't we want to keep studying and learning and try to get to the root of why this boy believes he's a girl, a biological chromosomal male? Don't we want to do our best to get to the root of that and help him be at home in his own body? Rather than put him on hormone blockers as he's before puberty, and then radical, unalterable for life sex change surgery, and then hormones for life, and then he'll never be fully a woman? Don't we want to keep studying and learning? Isn't that what compassion does? Where is this going? Yeah, Emma Watson. She received the first gender-neutral acting award in award show history at MTV Awards. And by the way, I wrongly said Maxine Waters got the award for resisting the system. She was giving the award for resisting the system, but obviously as an icon of that. That's, from my viewpoint, she is the system. So I misstated that earlier. But yeah, gender neutral, it's all the rage. That's what prompted me to write my open letter to Miley Cyrus. Someone sent me an article and said she's now gender neutral, you know, pansexual, gender neutral, and talking about that. I just felt to reach out to her. It's compassion that moves me, as well as the love for truth. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nation. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Boy, I just had this sent to me from Charisma News website. They posted earlier today my open letter to Miley Cyrus. And I just want to share this quick note that I got. If you haven't read it, go to AskDrBrown.org and check out the latest article, my open letter to Miley Cyrus. I think it'll speak to you and bless you. 866-348-7884 is the number to call. This is Michael Brown, and it's my delight to be with you. But this is a mom writing in, and she said this: please tell Michael Brown that his articles are so awesome and his heart for God and people is beyond inspiring. This open letter to Miley Cyrus is incredible in so many ways that I'm speechless. We have a 14-year-old Jesus-loving daughter who listens to her old music and still looks up to the old Miley. This letter made me cry. Thanks for posting these awesome, thought-provoking, God-centered, and inspiring writings of Michael Brown. What a sweet, gracious note from a mom, Diane. That's why we write what we write and say what we say on the radio and put out the videos we do to bless, help, equip, strengthen you and to reach a world that doesn't know the Lord. Have you heard about the hunger strike Palestinian activist, terrorist, mass murderer, or multiple murderer, I should say, with multiple life sentences being served in a prison in Israel? He's leading a hunger strike. Have you seen any of the videos that the Israelis have published now? Yeah, he's eating during the hunger strike. One, you see him smuggling some cookies. I say smuggling. He takes these cookies and he goes behind the bathroom door and sits down on the toilet. Now, he's not going to the bathroom. He's got his pants on. He sits down on the toilet, closes the door, and kind of hunches over so you can't see him eating. Another one, he's got a little stash by his bed, takes out a candy bar and eats it. Another one, he's eating salt, which is something you do to help, you know, with during a fast or something like that. So interesting, the man leading a hunger strike in prison in Israel, a multiple murderer, eating candy bars and cookies during his hunger strike. Which reminds me of, where was it? Somewhere at Ivy League school, I think, a few weeks back, that they were calling for a hunger strike, but basically said if you do need to eat, you just go ahead and someone else will come and replace you. So, a little bit newer version of the hunger strike. I remember years back in the days of the Irish Republic Army and the Civil War in Ireland. That was it, Bobby Sands? Matt, you can check, see how my memory was, that he went on a hunger strike. They were striking to wear military uniforms, not prison uniforms, because they said we are military. We are in an armed struggle for our nation. We are not criminals. We don't want to wear prison outfits. We want to wear military outfits or military prisoner outfits, whatever it would be, and probably some other things. And this was decades ago, but I remember him starving to death after 66 days. At a certain point, you even try to put fluids into someone's body because they couldn't force him to eat. And then the point where he can't resist anymore, it was too late. And I believe his father said he was a soldier. He fought as a soldier and died as a soldier. But see if I'm right. I mean, this is decades ago, but I remember him starving himself to death. Bobby Sands, I think, was the name. And dying after 66 days of not eating. Yeah, far, far cry from eating candy bars and cookies in your prison cell while leading a hunger strike, or saying, okay, if you get hungry and have to eat, someone else will replace you. Talk about dying, though, for a lost cause on top of it. All right, we'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry, send God by. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, thanks, Matt, for digging up the info for me. Yeah, I had it right. Bobby Sands died after a 66-day hunger strike, 1981. And I remember using it as an illustration of dedication to a cause, but the wrong cause. Giving yourself sacrificially, but in a destructive way. And that the people of the world would do that for their own cause, even to the point of death. And yet sometimes we hardly are willing to raise a finger for the right cause, or if it's going to cost us, maybe someone's going to unfriend us on Facebook or give us a dirty look at work, that we're not going to do the right thing. God help us. God help us. You look at those who sacrificed even their lives uselessly, worthlessly, for a destructive cause. It speaks to me to say, hey, give your life. Give your life for something that really matters. 866-348-7884. One other note from Israel, and we posted the video on our Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page. Prime Minister Netanyahu is addressing fake news, not just from Hamas, but as being reported by major media in America and around the world. Hamas has put out a new statement which no longer calls for the annihilation of all Jews or the specific annihilation of all Jews in Israel, but says it does not recognize a Jewish state and that every square inch of the land is theirs, is Palestinian. Why is it being presented as a modification of their views, or excuse me, a moderation of their views? And why is it being presented as, well, yeah, they welcome, you know, Palestinian state with smaller borders? As Prime Minister Netanyahu said, their position remains the same, 100% rejection of the state of Israel. And no, they're not calling for the annihilation of all Jews worldwide, but 100% no Jews living there in what they call Palestine. And that if they accept a smaller Palestinian state, it is simply for the purpose of destroying the Israeli state. So with typical Netanyahu effectiveness, after exposing the fake news as if, yeah, Hamas now welcomes a two-state solution, or Hamas, you know, accepts a smaller Palestinian state, you know, as if they're like, yeah, we're okay with Israel. We're okay with Israel being named. No. There's no recognition. There can be no recognition. Radical Islam cannot recognize a Jewish state. Cannot. For many reasons. One being that any territory that was previously controlled by Muslims, that is no longer controlled by Muslims, is an open affront. It is an open wound. It is an open sore. It's like your neighbor runs off with your wife, and every day you pull up to your house and he's with your wife and you don't have your wife. It is considered an open affront, an open sore, an open assault on Islam. And in particular, a place like Israel, Palestine, a place where you have now Dome of the Rock and Al-Aqsa Mosque. Jerusalem is not the most important city in Islam, and it does not have the history in Islam that it has with the Jewish people, but it's still an important city. So to no longer have control of Jerusalem and to have a Jewish state, Jews who, according to radical Muslims, are the sons of apes and pigs, to have them ruling it? No. There can be no radical Islamic recognition of a Jewish state. If there ever is one, it'll be false. It'll be false for the purpose of destruction later on. That's pretty basic, pretty self-evident. So Prime Minister Netanyahu then takes the sheet with the statement of Hamas. You didn't see it. It's been on, but it's been on his desk. He picks it up and says, where does this belong? He crumples it up, holds up a waste bin, and throws it in there. Yeah, well done in revealing the truth. In fact, on a lighter note, these are some great clips back from 1990. Donald Trump is on with Charles Feldman. This is March 1990. Feldman's pressing Trump on some of the dire predictions being made about the casino. He's about to open his billion-dollar Atlantic City casino, the Trump Taj Mahal. And ultimately, he walks off. He walks off from the interview when he's asked certain questions. But grab clip number 7. I want to start here at I have to smile listening to, especially the next clip, but let's get started. Donald Trump back in 1990 on CNN.
What about also those who say that you're being, in recent months, awfully thin-skinned?
I've always been thin-skinned. I've been thin-skinned from day one. When people say something false, I attack those people. Because the news gets away with murder. The news media, they get away with murder.
All right, so this was Trump back in 1990. Now, I have not followed him. I'd never watched What the Apprentice, not followed his career until he ran for president. All right, so I didn't know that he was going after the media back then. But you're gonna love it. If you like Donald Trump or not, you're gonna get a kick out of this next segment, interacting with Charles Feldman, 1990 CNN.
It's very tough in terms of libel laws because the media is so protected, and it's ridiculous that they're so protected, but they can write virtually anything. The difference is with me, at least they pay some price. And I think more people should have that attitude, and I think you'd find a lot more accurate reporting, including yours.
What was inaccurate so far?
I thought your demeanor was inaccurate. I thought that questions that you were posing to people in my organization were inaccurate and false and unfair.
Well, questions by definition can't be inaccurate.
The
questions.
Well, I think the questions themselves were put in such a way that made them statements, and they became statements as opposed to questions, and I think that's not good reporting.
Such as?
It doesn't matter. I mean, I don't think your viewers would be very interested in it, nor do I want to embarrass you.
Some things do not change. It seems to me that President Trump was speaking in even more specific ways then, and maybe it's become even more broad-stroked now. But he said, look, I've always been thin-skinned, and if you're going to misreport me, you're going to pay a price. So he continues with that policy today. You're going to come at me, I'm going to come at you harder. You're going to speak things that I feel are inaccurate, I'm going to blast back against you. There's a price to pay. That's been his policy. And obviously, in terms of outward success or political success or worldly success, it's worked for him. Obviously, there are Kingdom of God principles that would be different sometimes. There are times when it's right to expose error, expose misrepresentation, expose lies, because people are being hurt by those. At other times, it's right to just look the other way. At other times, it's best to ignore and just bless those who curse you and go on. Each situation calls for a different response, but the attitude of the heart as believers is not to retaliate. Our attitude is to win people and to get the truth out. That's what motivates us and moves us. But just going back to 1990, I found that absolutely fascinating. And yeah, to say your demeanor is inaccurate and your questions are inaccurate. Well, questions by nature can't be inaccurate. Well, sure they can. Sure they can. If somebody mistook me for, there's got to be a lot of Michael Browns out there, okay? Let's say someone went to a family member of mine and said, "How did you feel when your husband was shot by the police in Ferguson a few years ago?" Well, it's a different Michael Brown. It's a different Michael Brown. If you ask that to my wife Nancy, no, I'm not 18 years old, and I wasn't shot in Ferguson a few years ago. So questions could be inaccurate, but I understand President, well then, businessman Trump's point. And I understand CNN's response, but I just found that all interesting. And I'll tell you what, we really have to be careful. I've said this before, I want to say it again. We really have to be careful before we repeat things, before we pass them on. We posted on our Facebook page, I guess it was over the weekend, someone on our team posted on our Facebook page that there was some Scientology facility in Tennessee that was shut down because it had some people that were being kept prisoner, something like 9-10 months against their will, and it was shut down. And I went online just to read about it because it was getting a lot of shares on our Facebook page. I went online to read about it, and I read one report that said, no, this was misinformation. Actually, it was not actually affiliated with Scientology at all. And then I went and researched some more, and it turns out it was. So here was a headline, then someone else saying, no, the headline was wrong. And then others saying, no, this is right. And then one report after another reporting it. You got to check. You got to check. You've got to make sure it's the headline accurately represents the story, and that the story is not just a biased story, that the story is based on fact. There's so much information available. It's going to take us a little bit longer these days to dig a little deeper to make sure we're getting things accurately. And it can pretty easily be done. We come back. I want to weigh in on Obamacare and Trump care. Stay right here.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Yeah, so in the case of Scientology, there is a history with many accusations of people being held against their will and all kinds of crazy practices. And that's why the support was not surprising whatsoever. And yeah, there have been documentaries revealing this with firsthand testimonies. This is one of the, but they've been very powerful with powerful lawyers they can hire and lots of money behind them and great secrecy behind their organization. Hence, something like this happening is eye-opening when it's kind of brought to the light of day. But even still, we want to check, double check to make sure that reports are accurate. I encourage you to do the same. If you hear me say something and I say this is well known and backed up, and all right, hopefully I've got a good enough track record with you that you know I'm not going to speak lightly or just shoot from the hip. And if I don't have a lot of information, I'll tell you firsthand I don't have a lot of information. But still, if it's a major thing, you really want to check. You really want to check yourself before just repeating what I have said. All right, 866-348-7884. You know what? I'm giving out the phone number, but I'm not taking any calls. I've just got a few minutes, and I want to weigh in on something here. Most of us in America identify with either the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. Most of us, right? The majority of Americans identify with one party or the other and tend to vote with one party or the other and tend to feel that one party or the other best represents their viewpoints, generally speaking. I know there's great distrust in the government right now. Most Americans are either for Trump or against Trump. You have many that are neutral, but most are for Trump or against Trump, just like most were for Obama or against Obama. Would you agree, just generally speaking? Why am I saying all that? Because it's very easy for us to have knee-jerk reactions, partisan political reactions. And whatever the thing is, we are just going to lean in the direction of, well, I like Trump, I don't like Trump. I like Obama, I don't like Obama. I agree with the Republicans, I agree with the Democrats. Rather than actually looking at issues independently. So it struck me, you know, will Trump succeed in repealing and replacing Obamacare? Will Obama's legacy be lost? And it's like, as I began to think about this, I said, this is not like a political battle here. We're talking about people's lives. We're talking about people's lives. Now, I virtually said nothing about President Obama's Affordable Health Care Act because I never majored on it. I had no expertise in it. I know the great majority of doctors and healthcare professionals I talked to were very upset with it and said that it hurt their practice and made it very difficult for them to do what they were doing because of rising costs and things like that. I know individuals who were fined because they didn't have personal health insurance. They had to pay fines. I know businesses that had to cut back on numbers of employees because of mandates under Obamacare. I know for myself, after having the same policy for Nancy and for me for years with the same insurance carrier, that we got dropped towards the end of last year. They said just as a result of Obamacare, it was grandfathered out. The whole idea you get to keep your provider, that was not the case. That was not the case. But on the other hand, many thought it was positive and said, hey, we got health care that we didn't have before. I just had no expertise in it. That's why I've not made a big fuss about it. And now with Donald Trump's initiative and what the House is working on and now going to the Senate to repeal and replace Obamacare, I know some of the arguments for it. And now people are saying, well, hey, people are going to die. There's going to all this rhetoric from the left and the radical left. People are going to be dying. They're going to be dying because of Trump care. Well, you could have said they're going to be dying because of Obamacare because so many doctors said it hurt their practice. We got to get past the rhetoric. We've got to get past the partisan politics. I don't just want to have a gut-level reaction. Well, I'm for Obama, I'm for Trump. I'm against Obama, I'm against Trump. We want to look at issues. We want to look at issues, and we want to understand how much government should be involved, what's good and positive about, say, British healthcare system or Norwegian healthcare system, where things are state-subsidized. It's interesting. I was talking with an individual from Scandinavia, and he said in his country, they paid like 40% taxes of their income, 40% or more. But he said it was really easy and that he didn't have to make decisions. Like healthcare is just simple. And so many things are just simple because the government ran it. And he thought it was good. He said, yeah, I paid a lot in taxes, a lot more in taxes than I do in the States, but now I have to make all these decisions. It's horrible. Of course, he's been brought up with that. We're over there like, where's all my money going? What's happening to all my money? I saw some folks posting from the UK said, our healthcare is not rationed here. It's not rationed. Everybody gets the healthcare they need. And it's government subsidized. It's not rationed. They said, no, people die because they can't get the healthcare that they need. And in America, it would never happen. There are arguments on all different sides. What I'm saying is, this is an important issue in terms of what government should and shouldn't do and whether there's access to health care, whether there's access to insurance, whether the church is supposed to step up. These are all legitimate questions to look at. And I just want to encourage you, don't make it a partisan political issue. Don't make it a partisan political issue. I don't know how bad or good Obamacare was, or how bad or good what's being proposed now is Trump care is. I don't know. It's not my area of expertise. I know the arguments each way, some of them key ones. I know issues in terms of government involvement. I know the anecdotal stories. Okay? The last doctor I talked to about it, who was absolutely not a fan of Barack Obama, this is still before Donald Trump was elected. He said, what's wrong with Obamacare? He said, more people have health care. He was the first doctor I talked to who was positive. All the others I talked to were negative. All I'm saying is, let's not just have a gut-level, partisan, political reaction. That's my plea. Because we're talking about people here. We're talking about lives here. That is the point I'm making. Let's step higher. Fair enough? Same with immigration. Don't just say, Trump, Obama, Republican, Democrat. No. Let's really think through, before God, as citizens of a higher kingdom, what's best in his sight for America, for immigrants. Let's think these things through with a higher standard. Fair enough? Hey, friends, have you gotten my free ebook, 7 Secrets of the Real Messiah? It's an eye-opener and page-turner. It's yours. It's yours when you go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, and just click to sign up for my emails. It's yours free today. We'll be back with you right here, same time on The Line of Fire.